once again, Namo Myoho Rengekyo. Thank you for being here. You're very welcome if this is your first time coming here. The channel has a great many playlists with different subject matters and different sutra and so forth. Please don't forget to look through those playlists to perhaps find something that's relatable to you, what you're curious about right now. Otherwise, this is, I'm starting off another letter, Gosho, from the major writings. This particular letter to the brothers, is a letter that, it's a kind of a long Gosho, but the reason being that he's writing to these two brothers who are actually officers of the current government in the shogunate. And they're in the office of construction and building. They're pretty important to the governance of Japan. So they're because of their stature in the society, Nichiren's letters tend to be a little bit more doctrinal, a little bit more foundational to help them in their practice and to defend their practice, because they're in a very important position dealing with a lot of other people. It's influential. And therefore, not being isolated, the practice is for themselves and for all of those around them. So their challenges in their daily practice is going to be different than perhaps others who are couples living in the country and that kind of thing, right? So these are the letters when Nichiren is talking to influential people that tend to be more scholastic in nature. He'll address perhaps issues that they're dealing with specifically, but always in the light of great scholarship, not only his own, but not only his own doctrine, but his doctrine based on the Lotus Sutra, the history of Buddhist teachings, other sutras, all the way to Hinayana teachings, and he'll demonstrate, along with, the stories and fables of the culture that are well known, both in Japan and China, and abroad, but, cultural fables as reference. The brothers are interesting historically because their father was a deeply convictioned believer in the Ryokan's true word precept school. This created a lot of friction in the family, as you might imagine, and the father was vehemently opposed to the dedication of his two sons, the Munanega brothers, to Nichiren's doctrine. Until late in life, when the father finally acquiesced to the son's learned teachings from Nichiren and became a follower of Nichiren. So there's a lot of drama here, father-son drama. And so without, getting further into it, I think I set the stage well enough. Let's get into it. This will be multi-parts because I don't think I can get through this Gosho. I kind of set myself at a limit of an hour or less for these videos. Hopefully that's not asking too much of you. Again, all of these videos are being transcribed to the Buddhahood podcast, which is available wherever you get your podcasts. So you can download it and listen to it at your leisure, whenever you have time, listen to it in the car, if it's not too distracting, of course. And let's just get into it. He begins a letter to the brothers. The Lotus Sutra is the heart of the 80,000 teachings and the core of the 12 divisions of the scriptures. And we've talked about the 12 divisions before. You can go to my website at threefoldlotus.com, and there's in the core teachings page, there's one of those green buttons that right near the top, I think, that will take you to the 12 divisions, so you can do a little research on that and understand what that's about. Moving on, of course, the 80,000 teachings is a commonly used reference to just the voluminous amount of scholarship there is to study Buddhism. He goes on, the Buddhas throughout the three existences attain enlightenment because they take this sutra as their teacher, the Lotus Sutra. The Buddhas of the Ten Directions guide living beings with the teaching of the one vehicle as their eyes. Entering the sutra repository and examining the complete collection contained therein, I find that two versions exist of the sutras and treatises brought to China between the Yongping era of the latter Han and the end of the Tang dynasty. There are 5,048 volumes of the older translations and 7,399 of the newer translations. Each sutra claims by virtue of its contents to be the highest teaching of all. Comparison reveals, however, that the Lotus Sutra is as superior to all the other sutras as heaven is to earth. It rises above them like a cloud above the mud on the ground. If other sutras are compared to stars, the Lotus Sutra is like the moon. If they are as bright as torches, bonfires, stars, or the moon, the Lotus Sutra is then as bright as the sun. This is a general comparison. So, no idle, you can see, and this is why I gave you the groundwork earlier, the situation with the brothers and their father is a very intimate battle between the earlier teachings of Buddhism with Ryokan, who adds his own, category of things, and just, the True Word Precept Schools really, their doctrine pushes the Lotus Sutra down to be either it's elitist and not for the general populace, or it's inferior to earlier teachings. Really crazy when you think about it in retrospect, but in the day, that was, I don't want to give you the impression this was a school that just popped up around Nichiren's day. This was a school that was in Japan for hundreds of years. It was culled over long period of cultural shifts and politics and so forth. So these schools, they accepted these erroneous values, and so unfortunately, because they stick around, they actually impede progress to students of Buddhism because they misrepresent the order of teachings, the ultimate teaching being the Lotus Sutra. Even the words in the Lotus Sutra make clear that it is the ultimate eminent teaching. Because of tradition and history, they simply write it off. And this is what Nichiren is battling. And obviously, in talking to the two brothers, they are in the midst of that same battle with their father. So this is they need a lot of support from Nichiren, right? To keep their confidence, their resolve, and be able, with the scholarship that Nichiren provides them, not only to have the confidence, but to have the weaponry, as it were, to defeat their father's arguments. So their occasions of debate between sons and father, that are quite often, right? So let's go on. Nichiren says, more specifically, the Lotus Sutra contains 20 outstanding principles. The two most important are the teachings of major world system dust particle kappas ago and numberless major world system dust particle kappas ago. The former, and again, these numbers in Buddhism, they're unfathomably large for the reason that they imply that the teaching or this aspect of whatever teaching is fundamental to life itself. It wasn't just created by some guy writing his diary on a rock one day and went, aha, this is the truth. When we have these kinds of numbers, you know, we see this transcribed a lot in Buddhism, this idea of innumerable, immeasurable, right? Because these are statements of fundamental natures. They're not inventions of our minds, they're actual foundations of life itself. So, he goes on. The former is explained in the parable of the Phantom City. So if you read that chapter in the Lotus Sutra, which you'll find in a playlist here, you'll get the meaning of that chapter, and you'll understand that what it's talking about, the meaning of that chapter, is a fundamental truth. In the third volume, suppose someone grinds a major world system into dust. He then takes this dust with him and goes 1,000 major world systems toward the east, where he drops one particle. He proceeds another 1,000 major world systems eastward and drops the second particle. He continues in this manner, dropping another particle and then another until he has exhausted all the dust particles of the entire major world system. Then he gathers up all the major world systems along the route he has taken, whether they have received a particle or not, and reduces them all to dust. Already, this is just unfathomable, right? He places these dust particles in a row, allowing one entire kalpa to pass before the placement of each. When the first kalpa has passed, he places the second particle, and then the third, until as many kalpas have passed as there are particles of dust. The total length of time represented by the passage of all these kalpas is referred to as a period of a major world system dust particle kalpas. All right, can we just say this is just infinite? In our modern parlance, we would say this is infinite. Because to try to conceive of a beginning or a distance in time is just, it's ridiculous. It's unknowable. So he continues, it was this long ago, in the remote past indicated by a span of major world system dust particles, kalpas, that the three groups of voice hearers, including Shariputra, Mahakasyapa, Ananda, and Rahula, learned the Lotus Sutra from a bodhisattva who was the 16th son of the Buddha Great Universal Wisdom Excellence. So again, this is referring to expedient means. This is the teachings and the depth of the teachings in the Lotus Sutra. And why am I going through, why is Nichiren going through this much explanation? Because he's giving the sons a basis for argumentation and debate with their father. He's helping them understand and at the same time giving them tools to teach. He goes on. Deluded by evil influences, however, they eventually abandoned the Lotus Sutra. They fell back into the Flower Garland, Wisdom, Great Collection, or Nirvana Sutra, or further down to the Mahavacharana, Profound Secrets, or Meditation Sutra, or even backslide to the Hinayana teachings of the Agama Sutras. Continuing this descent, they fell back through the practice of goodness in the human and heavenly worlds, and finally into the paths of evil, or negative influences. During this period of major world system dust particle kalpas, they were most often born in hell of incessant suffering. This is the nature of karma, right? It takes a long time to expiate if you don't have the vehicle to break through it, which is Myoho Rengekyo. Anyway, I'm sure I'll get to that. He goes on, sometimes they were born in seven great hells, or less frequently in more than 100 hells. On very rare occasions, they were born into the world of hungry spirits, animals, or asuras, and only after kalpas, as many as dust particles, were they able to be born again in the human or heavenly world. The second volume of the Lotus Sutra states, quote, he will constantly dwell in hell, strolling in and out as though it were a garden, and the other evil paths of existence he will look on as his own home, end quote. Those who commit the 10 evil acts fall into the hell of repeated rebirth for torture or the hell of black cords, where they must spend 500 lifetimes or 1,000 hell years. Those who commit the 5 cardinal sins fall into the hell of incessant suffering and are born again in this world after remaining there for 1 medium kalpa. This is all from the expedient means and skillful means or devices, the teachings, the fables, the stories written to explore the concepts of mental life conditions, what goes on in the mind. He continues, why is it then that those who abandon the Lotus Sutra fall into the hell of incessant suffering and have to stay there for such an unimaginably great number of kalpas? Yes. The offense of discarding one's resolute mind and conviction in the sutra must at the time seem nowhere near as terrible as killing one's parents. And he's talking about the Lotus Sutra here. So again, he's talking about people who have access and learn the Lotus Sutra and yet somehow backslide, as he was saying earlier, to easier and easier, less demanding practices. It becomes just a rote thing to be a Buddhist, and they have no real drive toward the ultimate teachings. This is what's happening, right? So they're backsliding, so their resolve and therefore their life condition is going backwards. That's what all of this has been about so far. So now he's going on. Nevertheless, even if one killed one's parents in 1, 2, 10, 100, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, 1,000,000, or even 100,000,000 lifetimes, one would not have to remain in hell for a period of major world system dust particle kalpas. Even if one were to kill 1, 2, 10, 100, 1,000, 10,000, or as many as 100,000,000 Buddhas, one would have to dwell in hell for a span of numberless major world system dust particle kalpas. The 3 groups of voice hearers, however, had to suffer through a period of major world system dust particle kalpas, and the great bodhisattvas through a period of numberless major world system dust particle kalpas because of the offense they committed by discarding the Lotus Sutra. This shows what an unimaginably terrible offense it is. And why is it so unimaginably terrible? You know, if you think in a Western way, you know, I was born Catholic. So when I first read those kinds of things, I thought, well, that's quite a threat. if you don't follow my teaching of the Lotus Sutra, then you're pretty well damned, right? But what I can tell you after studying Buddhism for 40 years, that's not at all what's meant. What's meant is that because the teaching of the Lotus Sutra enables you to awaken your Buddha nature immediately, to live your best potential life, to have, as you would say, and I forget the poet's name, suck the marrow out of life, to really get this experience at its fullest and enable you to live your life in its fullest for yourself and your fellow man. The Lotus Sutra is the teaching that accomplishes this. This was the goal of Buddhism from the get-go, right? Before it was called Buddhism. This was Siddhartha's path to find how to cease the ego, the attachments, the source of suffering in life, so that life could be lived to its fullest. That's the point of Buddhism. It's very pragmatic. This Buddha-ness that we establish in our lives, this Buddha wisdom, is the wisdom to see our lives through the lens of Buddhism or Buddha, is to free ourselves from the attachments of time and permanence and all of these things so that we can experience everything at its fullest in the moment without attaching all of this garbage of impressions from the past and the imposition of expectations into the future. Just live it, right? So if you understand that, if you get to that understanding, if you learn that teaching, and you then turn your back on it, it's the most heinous thing you can do to yourself. Because not only do you then relinquish your life, your precious life, to suffering, but because we know of the bodhisattva relationship we have with our world, because our world is us, we are our world. You ever heard the term worldview? Well, we each have our own, don't we? So if we take the potential for that worldview and our lives to not only be maximal and wonderful, but by extension, those around us, influenced by that beautiful, precious life, changing and altering their lives. If we turn our backs on that, you see how it's much bigger than just the self. You're abolishing this great good, this great joy, this great appreciation. And you're backsliding on it, and you're going, nah, let me just learn how to light candles and incense, you know, and study that reverently, just so you can be part of a club or something, so you can promote yourself or whatever. It's just easier. What you're betraying is so profound, do you see, that this is where these writings come from. Not because you're a bad person for not believing this. It's because you're turning your back on yourself. That's why it's so unconscionable that you would do that. Why would you do that? So that's the place this is coming from. It's not about leaping guilt on you for not doing as I do, from Nichiren's standpoint or anyone who teaches the Lotus Sutra. It's the recognition that this is the ultimate teaching for you to gain your own enlightenment. This is the only purpose of the teaching. It isn't to indoctrinate. It isn't to convince other people. It is about your life being as maximal as it can. That will influence other people. But it has to come from you, your enlightenment, your example, your life condition. Right? So as bodhisattvas, that's what we do. We don't authoritarianly force people to do things. We try to open them up to the possibility that they can grow to be more deeply appreciative and more deeply experience their precious life. So we use words like assist or facilitate or teach, but it's not teaching from an authoritarian standpoint. It's teaching from an enabling standpoint, because as I've said before, teaching is something we do to ourselves, right? Others never really truly teach us. We learn through observing. And so people offer us influences, and we are free to experience their influence and to judge it for ourselves. That's how we teach ourselves. All right. Where are we time-wise? Oh, we're doing really good. So let's continue. I forgot what I got. So I'll just start back into this. Okay, here we go. So to put this simply, okay, to put this simply, he says, when one strikes at air, one's fist will not hurt. But when one hits a rock, one feels pain. The offense of killing an evil person is minor compared with the offense of killing a good person. which is grave. Now, that could start a lot of arguments, because you have to realize, from the standpoint of Buddhism, killing is just abhorrent to begin with. But when it comes to retribution, since this is what we're talking about here, I should be careful to say retribution. Again, you have to stay in the mindset that this practice is about how you treat yourself, how you build your own life condition to the state of Buddhahood. By study, increasing your Buddha wisdom, you then can learn how to stay in that Buddha way more and more, moment to moment in your life. So, when people learn this way of actualizing immediately their Buddha nature given in the Lotus Sutra, and they abandon it, they're creating a great offense to the quality of life, not only of themselves, but their entire world, right? So while we're talking about offense or retribution, not in the normal Western sense, let's talk further about the degrees of offense we do against our own Buddha nature. When we kill an evil person, it's a grave offense, but it's still less grave than if we kill a good person. So what's the evil and good, or bad and good in this case, right? If one kills someone who is not one's kin, it is like striking mud with one's fist. But if one kills one's parents, it is like hitting a rock. So, yes, killing is not acceptable. But certainly the degree of offense against killing your own parents versus killing, I don't know, say a burglar who comes into your home, both are killing, both are great offenses. But the relationship, the filial relationship, we're back at family here, between yourself and your parents, who gave you a vessel for which to instantiate your life itself, certainly has greater impact, greater influence on your Buddha nature than to kill somebody who's a burglar and doing wrong by you and possibly a threat to your life. You could say there's greater justification for doing that, but it's still killing. It's just that Nichiren is giving different examples of the depth of the nature of offense against your Buddha nature. Obviously, he's doing this because he wants to explain how deluded their father is in the depth of his denial, right? So this isn't about killing parents. It's about understanding the depth of karmic offense that's being waged here in lieu of our direct enlightenment. A dog may bark, he continues, at a deer without having its skull broken, but if it barks at a lion, its bowels will rot. An Asura who tried to swallow the sun and moon had his head shattered into 7 pieces. Because Devadatta harmed the Buddha, the earth split open and swallowed him alive. The seriousness of an offense depends on the person one harms. You could say it in a lot of ways. Anyway, I'll let Nichiren do the talking here. The Lotus Sutra, he says, is the eye of all the Buddhas. It is the original teacher of Shakyamuni Buddha himself, the Lord of Teachings. If one discards one word or even one brushstroke of the sutra, the offense is graver than that of one who kills one's parents 10 million times over, or even of one who sheds the blood of all the Buddhas in the 10 directions. This is why those who forsook the Lotus Sutra had to suffer for a period of major world system dust particle kalpas, or numberless major world system dust particle kalpas. Moreover, it is extremely difficult to meet a person who expounds this sutra exactly as the sutra directs. It is even more difficult than for a one-eyed turtle to find a piece of floating sandalwood, or for someone to hang Mount Sumeru from the sky, with a fiber from a lotus stem. So these are references to other parables and teachings. The one-eyed turtle analogy or story is in the it's in the lotus, but I've seen it before in other sutras, and it's a very interesting story. You should look into it. So again, all of this talk of killing good, bad parents, whatever, it's all to establish a scale of understanding around the supremacy, the value of the Lotus Sutra, and why turning away from it is such a grave self-offense inflicted on one's own life condition, right? The great teacher Tzu'en was the disciple of the Tripitaka master Xuanzang and the teacher of Emperor Dai Zhong. He was a sage who not only was well-versed in the Sanskrit and Chinese scriptures, but also had memorized all of the Buddha's sutras. The Buddha's ashes fell from the tip of his writing brush, and light shone forth from his teeth. His contemporaries respected him as though he were the sun and moon, and people in the latter ages earnestly sought out his teachings as guides for living. Even so, the great teacher Dengyo denounced him, stating that though he praises the Lotus Sutra, he destroys its heart. This statement means that though he intended to praise the Lotus Sutra, in the end, he destroyed it. The Tripitaka master Shan Wu Wei was once the king of Udyana in India. He abdicated the throne, became a monk, and in the course of his Buddhist practice, journeyed through more than 50 countries in India, finally mastering all the esoteric and exoteric teachings of Buddhism. Later, he went to China and became the teacher of Emperor Xuanzang. Every true word priest in both China and Japan has since become his follower. In spite of his having been such a noble person, he died suddenly, tormented by Yama. Yama is the regional, I guess you could call him in the West. I think our native, I know they're not Indian, the native cultures that were here in North America, would say this was the earth god, the protector of earthly life, right? It's more involved than that, but you get the idea. That's Yama. In spite of being such a noble person, he died suddenly, tormented by Yama, the lord of hell, though no one knows why. I, Nichiren, believe that this happened because though Shan Wu Wei was first a votary of the Lotus Sutra, when he read the Mahavachana Sutra, he declared it superior to the Lotus Sutra. There it is. Similarly, it was not because they had committed the 10 evil acts or 5 cardinal sins that Shariputra Madhyayana, my mouth is sticky again this morning, and the like were doomed to wander through the evil paths of existence for a period of major world system dust particle kalpas, or numberless major world system dust particle kalpas, nor was it because they had perpetrated rebellion or any other of the 8 offenses. It was because they had met someone who was an evil influence and discarded the Lotus Sutra to take resolute mind and conviction in the provisional sutras. They walked back. They walked away. So again, in the context of immediate awakening of our Buddha nature, as the Lotus Sutra teaches, if you walk away from that, aren't you in a sense killing yourself? Because you've decided that the glorious, precious enlightenment of Buddhahood that you can achieve immediately, well, it's either too hard or not good enough for you. So you're going to walk back to an earlier teaching and say, this'll do. So, when you take your driving test to learn how to drive a car, and you learn all the things to do with your car, and you can drive safely, and you've driven for 10 years, without an accident, very confident, safe driver. And then one day you wake up and you go, you know what? It's just too much of a bother to be a good, safe driver. I'm just going to start just ignoring all the street signs and everything. And all I'm going to believe in is that there's a road for my car to drive on, and I'm all alone and I'm going. How long do you think it'll be before you get into a major accident? As we would say in the West, you've thrown caution to the wind. Right? You've now become unreasonable. You've now become detached from reason, from proper behavior. So, this is in essence what this is talking about. You've learned the right way to do things, the correct, the most benevolent, the most immediately rewarding thing to do. And for some odd reason, through, as he indicates here, evil influences from others who would have you do something that they find much easier, less troublesome to do. And you want those friends. So attachments, once again, lead you to fall from your maximal potential. You've betrayed yourself. As well as, by extension, all those around you. But, you don't care, right? So he goes on. The great teacher Tendai commented, quote, "If they encounter an evil friend, they will lose their true mind," end quote. True mind means the mind that believes in the Lotus Sutra, while lose means to betray one's resolute mind and conviction in the Lotus Sutra and transfer one's allegiance to other sutras. The sutra reads, quote, "But when they are given the medicine, they refuse to take it." Remember the story of the doctor and his three sons? End quote. Tendai stated, quote, "Those who have lost their minds refuse to take the good medicine, even though it is given to them. Lost in the sufferings of birth and death, they run away to another land," end quote. This is all mental, right? Since this is so, believers in the Lotus Sutra should fear those who attempt to obstruct their practice more than they fear bandits, burglars, night raiders, tigers, wolves, or lions, even more than invasion now by the Mongols. This world is the domain of the Devil King of the sixth heaven. All of its people have been under the rule of this Devil King since time without beginning. Not only has he built the prison of the 25 realms of existence within the sixth path and confined all humankind within it, but also he has made wives and children into shackles, and parents and sovereigns into nets that block off the skies. To deceive the true mind of the Buddha nature, he causes the people to drink the wine of greed, anger, and foolishness, and feeds them nothing but dishes of evil that leave them prostrate on the ground of the three evil paths. When he happens on persons who have turned their hearts to goodness, he acts to obstruct them. He is determined to make believers of the Lotus Sutra fall into the evil, but he is unsuccessful. But if he is unsuccessful, he tries to deceive them gradually by luring them toward the Flower Garland Sutra, or the Sanskrit Avatamsaka Sutra, or in Japanese, Kigan Sutra, which resembles the Lotus Sutra. So that's interesting. I think on that note, we've covered a lot of ground on this sutra. I want you to digest the idea as you listen to this or as you watch this video, that Nichiren is using the expedient means of Buddhism, the teachings of the Lotus Sutra itself, commentaries by other scholars like Tendai and Dengyo, and Myalo. I don't think he's mentioned Myalo yet. Demonstrating what the fables are meaning, what they're trying to say. And he's trying to illustrate it for the sons so that they have a deep understanding and conviction by their understanding of the proper order of the teachings, first of all. Secondly, the nature of the offense that their father is committing. That he is so staunchly against their practice of Nichiren's doctrine, of Myoho Renge Kyo, of the Lotus Sutra specifically. Forget Nichiren. He just, because he follows a school that has besmirched and walked away from the Lotus Sutra, he has adopted that position. This, the evil friend, is this erroneous school of Buddhism that has influenced their father to take resolve in that thinking, which runs against his own enlightenment, though he doesn't realize it. He has been completely taken over by this illusion, this delusion. And the delusion in Buddhist writing is given a name. It's given the devil king, or the earthly king, god of Yama. The influences that tear us down to our basest form, right? This is what he's describing. And he's doing so that the brothers can feel some compassion as well as empowerment as to how to deal with the negativity from their father. This is a profound lesson for the brothers, one that they'll learn and apply everywhere in their lives, but more specifically to their current situation with a very powerful filial relationship, their father. This isn't just anybody. So it's very complicated in the Japanese social structure as well as in their Buddhist practice, right? So we'll go on with this in the next one. This is part one. A lot to think about. Perhaps if you have this Gosho, reread it, whatever translation you have. I've currently reloaded a correction of a lot of the grammar and a lot of typos, quite frankly, in this volume. But a lot of the language that still kind of puts forth a Western religious spin on Buddhism that just is very confounding and confusing, and I dislike tremendously. And so I'm constantly, as I read through these Gosho, looking at verbiage that just needs to be cleaned up and translations that are Western influenced and don't truly portray the sentiment and the meaning of these teachings. So without, you know, adding my own agenda to any of this, I'm simply trying to clarify the teachings so that they make sense to us. Our capacity to understand these teachings isn't so infantile anymore that we need to be led through erroneous language. So I'm really trying to expurgate very carefully those kinds of bad influences in these writings. And that is going through approval right now. And once it achieves approval, I'll get a proof copy and I'll go through it as well. And if it looks good, it'll be approved for publishing and you'll be able to get it on Amazon or wherever you buy books. Right now, the current version's available on lulu.com/kwoon, where I put all my books up. But this new version will be far easier to read and cleaner. It'll be the same content. It'll just be cleaned up first of a great number of typos and nonsensical page references, and other than that, just better language, little things, you know, like the word evil or faith, words that they have religious overtones that don't belong in this dialogue. So little things like that, but they occur constantly, so they drive this idea in and unconsciously as we read and talk through it. And I want to remove that from these transcriptions. So, blah, blah, blah. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next one.